Related show are those of the show personalities and guest alone, and not those of Vic Kanellis Media Group, its parent, affiliates, or stations. VCMG Live is not responsible for any content, information, or opinions expressed. User bears full responsibility for their reliance on such content, information, or opinions.
Welcome to Oh My God, I'm Getting Older and So Is My Mom with Scott Greenberg of Comfort Care Senior Services, a show about coping with getting older ourselves and dealing with our aging parents. If you have questions about how to cope with these stresses, call Scott at 877-960-9960. Now, here's Scott.
Everybody, another edition of Oh My God, I'm Getting Older and So Is My Mom. On True Oldies from Fort Lauderdale to Fort Pierce, we're going to talk tonight about getting older and what happens at the end of that journey. One of the very first people I ever met when I came to town and got involved in the healthcare space was my guest tonight. He really is a mesmerizing speaker who deals with an incredibly difficult subject with grace, dignity, and humanity, and a touch of humor, too. We're talking about dying. Dr. Leonard Hawk is here, and he is the former medical director of Hospice by the Sea, amongst many other important roles. And we're going to discuss hospice and more with one of the nation's most knowledgeable experts on the subject matter. I'm going to speak with Dr. Hawk in just a second, and I'll tell you more about him. But first, just a few things. COVID is real. The people in the studio, two of the three people who are usually here with me tonight, are out with COVID. COVID is all around us. Whatever you do, take precautions. Just this afternoon, a new booster, a new shot was approved. I'm not a physician, but I encourage you to talk to yours. And if you're eligible and in need, please get that. We want you to keep coming back. So do that. The next thing I want to talk about is Rosh Hashanah for those who celebrate is this week. So I want to wish everybody a happy and a healthy new year for those who celebrate. I hope it is a very sweet new year. And lastly, I want to talk about 9/11. Today is the 22nd anniversary of 9/11. I happen to have been on an airplane on 9/11. I left LaGuardia Airport at exactly the same moment as those two fateful flights. It's been a 22 years. Doesn't seem like it was long enough for us to come to grips with this. I lost a first cousin. I'm sure many of you know others who have as well. Take a moment today. Remember how we all felt that day after. I know there are a lot of differences in our world today, but on 9/12, we were unified and together. And I encourage you to remember that, at least for today. And so put those arguments and disagreements aside and come together for my show tonight. I'm going to talk to Dr. Hawk, tell you a little bit more about him. He is, he was born and raised in Oklahoma. He's an Army medic in Vietnam, or was an Army medic in Vietnam. He went to medical school and did his advanced training in Kansas City. He was an ICU medical director, a geriatrician, obviously. He came here in 2007 to lead various palliative care teams. He's on the board of directors of the Florida Medical Directors Association. He's a noted educator, lecturer about serious illness and quality decision making near the end of life, and which we are going to talk about tonight. He is actively pursuing legislation requiring patient wishes for care with respect to how they want to be treated. It's called PULSED, and we will come back to that in a bit. Dr. Hawk, welcome to the show. How are you tonight? Dr. Hawk, you there?
Yes, right here. Hi, Scott.
How are you? I don't know if you heard all of that. I hope you did.
So it was very generous. Thank you.
Thank you. I know that you and I, more you, just I was kind of a tag along. We collaborated on an effort that we're not going to talk a lot about tonight, but it opens the door to many questions about hospice and how we die. So I think I'm going to start there if it's okay with you. I saw you recently at a conference where you described the three ways in which we die. Can we start there and tell the audience about the three ways in which we die?
Of course, Scott. You know, even the thought of dying and talking about dying is a topic that sends people away. I really, and you've echoed me, talk about how we live to the very end. So it's not about our dying stage. It's about living to the end. But when the end comes, there are three ways that it can come. We can drop dead suddenly. In my lectures that I presented to you and your esteemed group and others, I lightheartedly calling that drop like a rock. And actually, that's the way most people would like to go, living life to the fullest, embracing their holidays, thinking about the past 22 years ago, surrounded by love, doing what they can in their life, and then suddenly coming to a peaceful and quick end. When doctors are asked how they want to die, most of them say, I want to die peacefully and suddenly, and if I could, I want to die in my sleep. So first, the way we die is quickly. We drop like a rock. Then secondly, we die in a predictable and gradual manner. And we'll see this with neurodegenerative diseases. Now, that sounded like a doctor, didn't it? Neurodegenerative. But those are the kind of illnesses like Parkinson's and amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, Lou Gehrig's disease, dementia, Lewy body, Pick's disease, that affects our brain, and we and the people who love us can see it coming. We may be a bit forgetful. We may have difficulty with words. We may become confused, less able to make good decisions. And with that cognitive or mental decline, then comes the physical decline. We eat less, we lose weight, we lose bowel and bladder function, we have difficulty standing or walking. That's predictable and gradual. That can be slow over many years, even a decade, or it can be a bit quicker over many months, but slow and gradual. We can see it coming, and we can predict the end. And then there's the better and worse, the good days and the bad days. Examples might be heart failure, where our legs swell up, our lungs fill with fluid, our heart gets enlarged and weaker, we're short of breath, we're gasping with heart failure, we rush to the emergency room, they give us water pills and oxygen, and we recover, we bounce back a bit. COPD and lung disease could follow this same pattern where we have an episode of bronchospasm, wheezing, suffocation, shortness of breath. We run to the emergency room. We get oxygen, bronchodilators, breathing treatments, and we fight back a bit until the next time it happens. So we see this bad day, and we decline significantly. We fight and bounce back again, a good day, but not the best day. And then later on, we decline again, we fight back, we decline again until we cannot any longer. So we drop like a rock, we have gradual and predictable, and we have the good days and bad days, the three ways that we die.
When I saw you speak last time, it just reminded me as I was listening to you, there is a chart that is predictive for us. When you say slow and predictable, there are telltale signs that have to do with how many times we're hospitalized. You kind of alluded to it in the third explanation. Can we talk about, I know without a chart, it's hard to do it on the radio. People can't see the chart.
And I'll give the name of the chart, and you and I and our listeners can look it up. It's going to be available to anyone. You know, when we drop like a rock, there's no chart for that.
Right.
That might be a heart attack or a stroke or a car wreck or, God forbid, suicide or homicide, but it's a sudden death. So in the good days and the bad days, we can start to predict how many bad days are going to be in front of us. And with the gradual and predictable, we can use a chart. And people can look it up. It's not just available to doctors. It's called the palliative, P-A-L-L-I-A-T-I-V, palliative performance scale. scale, PPS. So you and I, thanks to God, are at the top of that scale. We're 100%. We're thinking clearly. We're energized. We love our family. We tell funny jokes. At least I do. We can still jump high. We can laugh hard. And we're just very productive. We're 100%. Now, at 90%, maybe we're still the same, but we have to take a medicine for cholesterol or blood pressure. We still love, laugh, work, and are energized. At 80%, perhaps instead of seeing our doctor a couple times a year, we have to see our doctor every month. At 50%, I'm going to jump on down. We start to need help. We can't work anymore. We're too weak. We're quick to exhaustion. We have several medical problems. Our family has to remind us to come to the dinner table, to take a shower. At 40%, we're starting to lose some bodily function. And it's about 40% when we're weak and we're confused. We really sometimes can't recognize even our families. We don't take care of our personal hygiene. It's about this place that our families for us are thinking about assisted living or home care, if with an attendant like you're an expert at. At 30%, we're often sick with pneumonia, a urinary tract infection, a fall, a fracture. At 20%, we're very sick. We're likely in the hospital, or we've decided to be in hospice. At 10%, we're actively dying. We're pale. We're gasping for air. We're not responsive. We can't eat or drink. And then we take our last breath at 0%. It's called the Palliative Performance Scale. Is that the one you're reminded of?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I found that chart fascinating when I saw it. In fact, I copied it and brought it into the office. So you mentioned two words in that explanation, which I think people both don't understand and often confuse. You used the words hospice and palliative. You were, of course, when I first met you, the medical director of Hospice by the Sea. So why don't we start with hospice? What is hospice, and when does that enter the picture? And I ask that because most of my audience believes hospice is the last 2 days of your life, and nothing could be further from the truth. So what is hospice, and when does it come into our lexicon?
Well, hospice is a word that almost nobody wants to hear because right. It does suggest the last 2 days. It's more than that, as you said. But hospice is equivalent to and has the stigma of you're going to die right away. Hospice actually comes from the word hospitality, to embrace, to comfort, to bring in and care for. So doesn't hospice and hospitality sound alike? Hospice has been around for centuries and decades in this country since the early 70s. And in the 80s, hospice became a Medicare benefit. Medicare will pay for hospice, all of hospice. It's the most generous healthcare benefit in America. It pays for medicines. It pays for the nursing visits, for the doctor visits, oxygen. It pays for the works, wound care. It's really a very generous healthcare benefit when people need it most. They don't want it because it's a sad time in life, but it's very generous. Hospice is made up of a big team, including doctors who are often board certified in hospice, doctors and nurses, clinical directors, pharmacists, social workers, chaplains of all faiths, and nurses' aides and assistants. So hospice is this huge team, and hospice is aimed at those people who can no longer be cured, get well, or recover. And they know it, and at that point in their life, they want to be the boss of their care. They want to tell hospice where they want to be, in their own home, or a nursing home, or an assisted living, or perhaps even a hospital if they're there. They get to predict the hours and dedicate the hours of when their visits will be, how they'll take their medication. It really puts the patient in charge of their own life, so they get the care they want from hospice for the rest of their life. And that care is not aimed at another blood test, another tube, another needle, or another machine. It is aimed at them being comfortable. So if Aunt Jenny wants to sit in her lazy boy chair with her cat in her lap and her Chardonnay at her side, hospice will help her do that and be comfortable for the rest of her life. So that comfort is called palliative or palliation. It's all about comfort. So all of hospice is about palliative care, palliation, and comfort. But palliative care alone, when we say hospice or palliative care is a consultant like myself. I don't have a team. I don't have a pharmacy. I don't have nurses. I'm there to see what the patient wants, what their goals are for the rest of their life, how I can help them be comfortable. They can accept that and not accept hospice, or they can say, thank you, Dr. Hawk. That's a plan that I want. Now put me in hospice so I can have it with the big team. How'd I do with that description?
That was great. I when we come back, I want to ask when people should consider grabbing the benefits of palliative and hospice, when they should be think about that. And then I want to talk about another misunderstood program, or I don't know what the word is. I'm having trouble tonight with my words. I want to talk about DNRs and advanced directives. We have a whole lot more. If you're just tuning in, I'm here tonight with Dr. Leonard Hawk. Dr. Hawk is an expert at end of life in terms of hospice palliative care, but he's also a serious illness consultant who has a wealth of knowledge and expertise in subject matter that sometimes we're all too afraid to talk about. But he talks about it in a way that is gracious and dignified and with a level of humanity and, dare I say, a touch of humor at times. If you have questions for Dr. Hawk or for myself about this subject, you can reach us at 877-960-9960. That's 877-960-9960.
I'm here with Allison from Comfort Care Senior Services. Allison, at Comfort Care, you guys are proud to be a family-owned and operated business.
That's right, Mike. It's myself and my husband, Tino, my sister, Melissa, and her husband, Joe, and my parents, Irene and Scott Greenberg. As you can tell by six family members being able to work together, family is extremely important to us. Our clients often have kids that live out of state or even overseas, and those extended family members want to have the comfort of being able to contact a family member at any time to follow up on how mom or dad is doing. While you are able to reach a family member at any time, our office staff is truly part of our extended family. They monitor the phones 24/7 in case of an emergency and are empowered to make decisions that are in the best interest of the client, because at Comfort Care, it's the quality of care, not the severity of your condition, that determines the quality of life. Call us at 561-630-1620. That's 561-630-1620, or visit our website at palmbeach.comfortcare.com. That's palmbeach.comfortcare.com.
Do your parents live in South Florida? We know it can be difficult to be there for them when you live far away. As your parents get older, things can change in an instant. Are you prepared?
Finding a trusted local expert to coordinate and provide care makes all the difference. Eldercare 360 can provide you and your family the proper guidance, support, and resources to assist you and your loved ones with their daily activities of living with healthcare challenges.
As a patient advocate, Eldercare 360 brings together a team of patient-focused, caring professionals with decades of experience. Call us to see how we can help before the crisis at 561-713-1800.
Make Eldercare 360 part of your team. Eldercare 360, patient advocacy, coordination of services, and full circle of care. 561-713-1800.
You might know that one out of four adults over 65 fall and end up in the emergency room each year. What hits even closer to home is that one in 10 adults over 65 fall every hour of every day in Palm Beach County.
Hi, I'm Dan Lagani, the CEO and co-founder of Silver Solutions, the on-demand safe living and home solutions company. At Silver Solutions, our mission is to help make your future look different. For over a decade, we've been working with families like yours to eliminate home safety risks so that you or mom can safely age in place. And when it's time to downsize or ready a family home for sale after a loss, Silver Solutions specialists will also help and do the work for you. To find out more, call now to schedule a free home assessment at 1-877-AGE-SAFE. That's 1-877-AGE-SAFE. Or visit us online now at silversolutions.com. Silver Solutions. We make growing older safer and easier for the whole family.
Welcome back to Oh My God, I'm Getting Older, and So Is My Mom, with Scott Greenberg of Comfort Care Senior Services. Reach Scott with your questions, 877-960-9960. Now, back to Scott.
Back, everybody. I'm here tonight with truly one of my most favorite people I've ever met in the space in which I typically travel. I'm here with Dr. Leonard Hawk, who I first met when he was the medical director of Hospice by the Sea, but he has held many positions in the area of serious illness, in the area of hospice, and of course of palliative care. He later went on to be the chief palliative physician at Trustbridge. Dr. Hawk, you did a great job of explaining what hospice was and palliative and the differences between the two. When should people consider thinking about hospice, though? I think that surprises people.
So the most common answer I get is, I don't want to think about that now, doctor. It's too morbid. Let's wait until our great aunt gets stronger. When the dust settles, we'll start to have that decision. And, Scott, the fact is that when we recognize serious illness, the dust does not settle. And people don't get stronger. They get weaker and weaker. Now, in the three ways that people die, drop dead suddenly, well, there's really no time to get palliative care or hospice. People die in their sleep quietly, we hope. But in the gradual, predictable decline, and with that palliative performance scale, when people start to have that decline, they can still think for themselves. They're cognitive, they're decisional, and they and their family ought to decide together what they want for the rest of their life and when they want it. If they want trials and treatments for cancer or Alzheimer's, they should have it. They should have it. And if they get better, I think we all sing the praises. If they get better for a while and then decline, or if they decline at all, then when do they want to have comfort, family and comfort? When do they want that? And that's up to them. Usually on that palliative performance scale, down around 40%, it's the time to make a decision. Unfortunately, it's often when people are in the hospital seriously ill and just can't recover no matter what happens. Well, that's the time. It's often late in the middle of emotional chaos. With those people who have good days and bad days, when you have two or three or more hospitalizations in 1 year, you ought to start to look at your future. It's likely not to get better. So that's a good time to start thinking about it. It's always better, Scott, to think about it early when you can think clearly than later when you're in the midst of dying and the emotional chaos is overwhelming. So always earlier the better.
I know most people, as I said earlier, think hospice is only for the last day or two, but I mean, I've had clients who have been on hospice for, you know, for maybe as long as a year, sometimes two, because they peak and valley. And it's, you know, it's a fascinating conversation. One of the things you said earlier about hospice was that it is the single most generous benefit from Medicare, and I think we ought to just reiterate that hospice never costs anybody any money. But anyway, I want to switch gears a little bit And we probably don't have enough time in this segment to finish the entire conversation, but I want to talk about DNRs, do not resuscitate, and advanced directives. And maybe I'll lay this up by repeating a story I know that you know because we've spoken about it, about someone I know who unfortunately tried to take his own life. 911 was called, and in spite of the fact that nobody in the family wanted resuscitation at that point because there was a DNR in place, the EMTs, in fact, did resuscitate this person. And lo and behold, the person has recovered completely. And so DNRs and hospice are entirely different. And I think that I want to talk a little bit more about that. Maybe I'll wait, and we'll go into break now, and I'll come back, and we'll talk about that then. If you're just tuning in, I'm here tonight with Dr. Leonard Hawk. Dr. Hawk is an expert in hospice and palliative care and end-of-life conversation, an important conversation that all too often few of us are excited about having, but unfortunately, it's an important conversation that we should have. When we come back, if you have questions for Dr. Hawk about this subject, you can reach us, 877-960-9960. That's 877-960-9960.
I'm here with Tino from Comfort Care Senior Services. Tino, you train all of your caregivers on how to deal with those who are struggling with Alzheimer's disease, right?
I do, Mike. This disease process is frightening for everyone, and change is the scariest thing for most people. Where we should start is changing the way we think. People are not dying from Alzheimer's disease. They are living with it, and we have to figure out a way for them to keep on living their best life possible. I always say activities of daily living keep people alive. Meaningful activities is what gives people a life worth living. Properly training caregivers on all sorts of dementia is very important. Learning about behavior modification techniques, avoiding triggers, tapping into the abilities that are preserved the longest with people with dementia, and figuring out what's important to them are all vital tools caregivers need to understand. Remember, it's about the quality of care, not the severity of one's condition that determines their quality of life. Let our family take care of your family. Call us at 561-630-1620 or visit us on the web at palmbeach.comfortcare.com.
I'm here with Allison from Comfort Care Senior Services. Allison, at Comfort Care, you guys really look at every client differently.
Activities of daily living keep people alive. Meaningful activities give people a life worth living. That's why at Comfort Care, we complete a social history for our clients. It taps into one's life story to help caregivers know more about who this person was and, quite frankly, still is. It asks questions like, what did you do for a living? What volunteer work did you do? What was your favorite book or movie? Were you in the military? And the list goes on. Understanding background like this is helpful in creating meaningful activities. For example, if someone was a photographer in the Army, perhaps a trip to the library to look at old maps of where they were stationed might be an interesting activity. If someone were an avid golfer, perhaps a makeshift putting green might be a fun outing. We couple that with a day in the life, which asks more of the daily routine questions, so a caregiver coming in is already familiar with the schedule. It makes the adjustment to having a caregiver that much easier. Caregivers want to help their clients live their best life possible. Being armed with the right information can help, because at Comfort Care, it's the quality of care, not the severity of one's condition, that determines your quality of life. Call us at 561-630-1620. That's 561-630-1620.
Welcome back to Oh My God, I'm Getting Older and So Is My Mom with Scott Greenberg of Comfort Care Senior Services. Reach Scott with your questions, 877-960-9960. Now, back to Scott.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm here with Dr. Leonard Hawk tonight. I hope you're enjoying the show so far. I know that I am. Dr. Hawk, before the break, I kind of introduced the concept of a do not resuscitate and advanced directives. And I know this leads into the bigger conversation about pulse. So I'm not sure that they're all directly related, but let's go. Let's talk about DNRs. Give me your take on them and when they're used.
I think the story you told about your friend who was uncomfortable in his life and in his body and had told his family, who loved him desperately but supported him in his decision to do not resuscitate. He had a healthcare event, but 911 was called. And 911, the first responders, their job is not to review documents. It's to try to save a life. So even though the family said, no, he didn't want that, They want to save a life. And in your friend's case, Scott, they did save his life, and he even recovered. So we look back and say, well, why would he want to be a DNR if he recovered? What do you have thoughts about that before I go on?
Well, I do have a lot of thoughts about it, but, you know, I think everybody brings their own personal opinions to this conversation. From my experience, there's a misunderstanding about it, what a DNR is, when it's employed, how you talk about it, and how it travels with you, or more likely doesn't travel with you, right? And who has to listen to it and who doesn't? I mean, it's a complicated subject.
Well, that's exactly right. You know, it may not be so complicated when you work with it for 30 years and see what happens. So, but it sounds, do not resuscitate, sounds like we have two options. We either will be resuscitated if we say so, or we will not be resuscitated. It probably would be better said to be do not attempt resuscitation, because in fact, when people drop like a rock, or they have gradual and predictable, or they have good days and bad days, and they have a cardiac or a pulmonary arrest, and resuscitation efforts are started, you know, CPR, cardiopulmonary resuscitation, really only about 15% respond in a positive way. That means 85% die no matter what we do. And that 15% that respond, well, most of them never recover to the way they were before. Oh, they may get a heart rate back and a blood pressure back, but they're not going to walk the dog again. They're not going to go to the piano recital for granddaughter. So, but we make it sound like the healthcare system will either resuscitate you, which we cannot guarantee, or we won't. And so the DNR, I'm a very healthy guy. I take no medicine. I have nothing wrong. I'm a DNR because when I either drop like a rock, when I have a gradual predictable decline or good days and bad days and my heart stops, I want that to be the end. I do not want to be one of the 85% that had broken ribs and a crushed chest and didn't respond at all, or one of the 15% that recover only enough to be an invalid. So the DNR to me is pretty clear. I'm a healthy guy and I may want Botox. I may want a gallbladder surgery. I may want to have my hip fixed, but I don't want them to pound my chest and put tubes in my lungs when my heart stops. There's my take on DNR. Your thoughts?
Yeah, well, look, I couldn't agree with you more. That's precisely me. I mean, I joke that I want to go just like my grandfather, quietly asleep at the wheel. Not quite like the other five people in his car. But the point is, I think a lot of people see, you know, like the football player Hamlin, who's now back playing football, and they look at Bronny James and they think, you know, that it's all uphill after that, and it's, and it's a miracle, right? And they come back to life.
It was a miracle.
Yeah.
It was a miracle.
But that's the point. It was a miracle. It's not normal. It's not what happens.
And we love it. And right. He was a healthy young man. Couldn't be healthier. I mean, he's a pro football player. You don't get healthier than that.
Right.
But he had the unusual event of having a contusion to his heart at a perfect, imperfect time in the heart rhythm that stopped his heart. It was recognized immediately and CPR was started, and he had no other organ problems. In fact, he probably has the healthiest organs in the world, and he probably will play football again. Scott, I don't want to hurt your feelings, but that's probably not you or me.
No, you're right. It's not. It really is not you and me. And then there is the other part of this, which I know we touched on, which is just because you're family knows you have a DNR and they tell the person at 911 or they tell the person in the emergency room, nobody carries their DNR around with them in their wallet. So the healthcare community is trained to life save even when it may not be what your wishes are, right? I mean, that's a reality as well, right?
And no, you're exactly right. You've got it. So good for the first responders, the paramedics, the EMTs. Their job is not to review our documents, our DNR form filed at home. Their job is to save a life, and they're going to do that and get us to the emergency room. And the emergency room's job is to save a life, too. So good for them. We love them. We like them. We want them to save lives. But if you don't want to have that, then you shouldn't call 911, and you should not go to the emergency room. You should probably call your primary doctor and say, this is what I want when that moment comes. Or if you go through the EMTs, first responders in the emergency room, as soon as you can or your family can for you, say, thank you for getting us here. You all did a great job. But now he does not want tubes or machines or feeding tubes or IVs. He just wants to be comfortable with his family at home.
And you are, which is a great segue into what we're going to talk about in the next segment, you are leading the push for patient-directed instruction that is different than a DNR and may, in fact, give you greater control over what you want in certain circumstances. And that is a pulse. And we're going to talk about that with Dr. Hock, who is spearheading the effort on patient-directed doctor's orders. And it's a really important issue. We're going to talk a lot about that and something that you should know more about, because I myself have filled one out, and you might want to do so too. So if you have questions for Dr. Hock or for myself about end of life and these serious issues that we're talking about tonight, you can ask him. All you have to do is call us, 877-960-9960. That's 877-960-9960.
Long before most of us ever heard of COVID-19, Silver Solutions understood that growing older wouldn't always be easy, but it could be safer and more rewarding. At Silver Solutions, we pride ourselves on creating physically safer homes for older adults, wherever home is. Whether you're senior-proofing your current home, downsizing to assisted living, or emptying a home after the loss of a loved one, Silver Solutions can help. To find out more about our services or to schedule a free virtual home assessment, call Silver Solutions today at 1-877-AGE-SAFE. That's 1-877-AGE-SAFE. Or visit us online at silversolutions.com. Our specialists are deeply experienced, compassionate, and follow rigorous CDC guidelines, including the use of full personal protective equipment for your family's safety. You can't control everything in life, but when it comes to making growing older safer and less stressful, you can count on Silver Solutions.
Do your parents live in South Florida? We know it can be difficult to be there for them when you live far away. As your parents get older, things can change in an instant. Are you prepared?
Finding a trusted local expert to coordinate and provide care makes all the difference. ElderCare 360 can provide you and your family the proper guidance, support, and resources to assist you and your loved ones with their daily activities of living with healthcare challenges.
As a patient advocate, ElderCare 360 brings together a team of patient-focused, caring professionals with decades of experience. Call us to see how we can help before the crisis at 561-713-1800.
Make ElderCare 360 part of your team. ElderCare 360, patient advocacy, coordination of services, and full circle of care. 561-713-1800.
I'm here with Scott Greenberg from Comfort Care Senior Services. Scott, you're very involved when it comes to the senior community.
That's right, Mike. We firmly believe that involvement in the community, giving back to the community, comes back to us in many, many ways. One of the ways it comes back to us is in our understanding of what's going on, what's new, what's trending. So we're very involved in the guardianship community, for example. We're involved in Alzheimer's community care, in the Alzheimer's Association, in Parkinson's. We run support groups. Basically, what I'm saying is that we want to be a part of the community in ways that we just don't receive benefit, but that we can give benefit as well. It's very important for us to understand the needs of the entire community and the needs of other people who are providing services. It is only through that we can ensure that we provide the best care possible.
possible.
Remember, Mike, it's the quality of care, not the severity of one's condition, that determines the quality of their life. So remember, let our family take care of your family and call us at 561-630-1620. That's 561-630-1620. Or look us up on the web at palmbeach.comfortcare.com.
Welcome back to Oh My God, I'm Getting Older and So Is My Mom with Scott Greenberg of Comfort Care Senior Services. Reach Scott with your questions, 877-960-9960. Now, back to Scott.
Welcome back, everybody. A most important show tonight, talking about a very challenging subject. We're talking about end of life. We're talking about dying, how people die, where does hospice come in, palliative care and what that really means, and DNRs. I'm here with Dr. Leonard Hawk, who is one of the nation's foremost experts on the subject matter. I've known Dr. Hawk for years, and he really is a special individual who has done amazing things for all those who have come in contact with him. Dr. Hawk, I alluded to this right before the break, because we've been talking about DNR and hospice and palliative care. You feel very strongly about an initiative originally called PULSE, Physician's Order for Life-Sustaining Treatment. I know that some of that is evolving. Perhaps you can talk us through that and explain why this may be so important and may be the answer to most people's wishes at critical moments in their health care.
Well, Scott, thanks for giving me that opportunity. Are you there?
Can I am certainly here. Yep.
Oh, gosh, all of a sudden it sounded different. So I hope I'm not...
No, I wasn't snoring.
So Florida has lots of patient rights, and there should be patient rights. The right to accept any treatment, the right to accept experimental trials, cancer trials, heart failure trials, and also the right to not accept, another blood test, to not accept another chemotherapy, to not accept another surgery. Many folks seem to think when we talk about this issue that in palliative and hospice care, advanced directives, end of life, which I really would prefer to call the rest of your life care, there seems to be the impression that we want folks to give up, to just not do anything. But in fact, patient rights and our position is we want every Florida citizen to have the kind of care that they want and to not have to endure the kind of care they don't want. And that comes to advanced directives and living wills and this POLST, P-O-L-S-T form. You can look it up, Florida POLST form. It's quite simple. It says, A, I want everything. B, I want some things for a while. Or C, I just want to have comfort for the rest of my life. So on that form and in your advanced directives or living wills, you can choose anything you want and anything you don't want. If you don't want a pacemaker, if you don't want a feeding tube, if you don't want dialysis, you have the right in Florida to say so. The problem is that most hospitals and care centers don't respect that. So in POLST, or now, as you well said, patient-directed doctor's orders, the patient tells the doctor what they want and what they don't want. The doctor and the patient talk over the benefits and the side effects, and then the doctor signs the patient wishes as an order. So I'm pushing for that as legislation. With your help, I now have met with 6 Florida state senators, 2 representatives, and we're saying the patient rights in Florida are good. Respecting the patient rights as a doctor's order needs to be in place. So wherever you go in Florida, your wishes remain your wishes no matter what.
And the question is, would a patient-directed doctor's order have to be filled out at each event, or could you fill one out and keep it in the house so that when EMT shows up, you can hand it to them and And then they know that the doctor says yay or nay about whatever they're about to do.
So the answer is yes and yes. Gosh, you got that one right. It should be updated. You know, most advanced directives in living will, if your audience ever went to a lawyer and had their trust in living will filled out, it probably is in a file cabinet they can't immediately find, and it may be 8 years old.
Right.
So what they wished, what they wanted 8 years ago, is it still what they want today? Once you've been admitted to the hospital four times, the sting of medical care changes your mind. So you should update your wishes, whether it's pulsed or patient-directed doctor's orders. You should update what you wanted when you were well may not be what you want when you're ill.
And it also could be as long as 8, 10, or 12 years ago, in some cases even more, and it might have been done in a different state. A lot of us on the radio tonight migrated here from other areas. I know Dr. Hawk and I both have, and I know most of my audience has, and so there might be some difference in some of the regulation down here. So this is an important subject. Are doctors familiar with pulsed, or is that kind of a niche specialty that they need to be educated on as well?
You always ask the best questions. Most doctors are aware of pulsed. Pulsed is legal. It's the law in 16 states. It's not yet the law in Florida, which is why I'm visiting senators and raising issues that patient rights are well established in Florida law. Confirming respect for those rights is what this patient-directed doctor's orders is about. Most doctors are aware of it and they want it.
It's a fascinating effort, and of course this is what prompted me to meet you the first time, you and Dr. Bagatelle, who is actually on the radio show almost 10 years ago talking about this very subject. So
Stuart is truly an expert.
Really?
Truly an expert in this area.
Yeah, and you guys have been spearheading this for a long time. It's an uphill battle, but it's a battle worth fighting. If you're just tuning in, I'm here tonight with Dr. Leonard Hawk, who is, amongst many other things, the former chief medical officer of Hospice by the Sea. We're talking about end of life and all of the considerations that go into how we want to die, because we do have options in that regard. Some of us don't, as Dr. Hawk explained. Some of us just drop like a rock, and many of us hope that's how we go. But for those who don't, we do have options, and knowing what those options are and being able to talk about them are really, really important. And Dr. Hawk facilitates that conversation. He has laid up my guest for next week, which I'll talk about in a second. But if you're sorry you missed the beginning of the show and you want to hear Dr. Hawk right from the beginning, which I encourage you to do if you tuned in late, the good news is you can, because we podcast this show tomorrow up and running around noon. We will put it up on your favorite podcast platform. All you have to do is search OMG, I'm getting up, it will pop. If podcasting is not your thing, I put it up on my website at palmbeach.comfortcare.com. ComfortCare, ComfortCare, regular listeners know you don't put a T in there. New listeners, listen up, be smart like the old listeners. Don't put a T in there. It's Comfort Care, ComfortCare, palmbeach.comfortcare.com. Of course, there is no reason to ever have to recapture the show, because you can listen wherever you are. All you have to do is download the iHeartRadio app, set a reminder to listen Mondays at 6 p.m., and there we will be. And if all else fails, we simulcast. So as long as you have access to the web, you can listen to us live every Monday, 6 to 7. TrueOldiesFLA.com. TrueOldiesFLA.com. Next week, we're going to talk more about advanced directives and doing proper planning and being current with your wishes. When I have Joe and Jonathan Karp here, elder law attorneys who can help you do just what Dr. Hawk tonight is suggesting that you do, not in the way of pulse, but in updating your current advanced directives. 2 weeks, of course, will be Yom Kippur, so we won't be here. We'll have a show for those who don't celebrate, but won't be live. And in 3 weeks, we're going to go in a whole different direction. We're going to talk about Bobby Darin, the life of Bobby Darin, with the fellow who is keeping his music alive, Ron Gartner, and his beautiful wife, will be here and we'll talk about Bobby Darin. But in the time I have left with Dr. Hawk, I want to talk about something. And, you know, it's interesting in terms of the timing, Dr. Hawk, because we're coming up upon, for the Jewish community, we're coming up on Rosh Hashanah. And it is one of my favorite holidays. It's one of my favorite holidays because of the family coming together and the tradition around the foods that we eat and food in general. It's not only the family, but it is the food. And food plays a very important role in end-of-life conversation. And I know this is something you're passionate about, so can you help everybody understand the relationship between food and end of life?
So, you know, that's one of the most emotional topics that comes up. You know, mom just isn't eating. We try to feed her. We give her Boost. We give her Ensure. She's got to eat to get stronger. Well, Scott, the fact is that in all of our cultures, and we cross-culture our love for food, so food is wonderful, and it represents two things to family. One is nutrition, it is, and two is love. A baby comes to the mother's breast for connection and nutrition and for love. And that love of the family, watching your loved ones eat, is wonderful. So when people get very seriously ill, they don't have an appetite. If you've ever had the flu or, God forbid, COVID, you didn't want to eat. You just wanted to be left alone. And when people get sicker than that, they just don't want to eat. So one of the things that I say is that people aren't dying because they're not eating. They're not eating because they've started the dying process. And it's important for families to know that forcing food and fluids when people are very sick and within hours, days, and weeks of their last breath, forcing food upon them is not comfort for them. It's comfort for the family because the family sees it as food and nutrition, but it's uncomfortable for the patient. If the patient wants to eat or drink, allow them to eat or drink anything. They can have white fish, they can have matzah, they can have whatever they want. They can whatever they want. But if they don't want to eat, let them be at peace.
It's really fascinating the how family dynamic is a challenge in the space we've been talking about all night, in both end-of-life conversation, but even as it surrounds food. Any advice to how to navigate the family dynamics in this conversation?
So it's very difficult because in your family and mine and every family, where there's love, there is this avoidance of loss. We don't want to lose our spouse, our mother, our best great aunt ever, and we'll do anything. We'll do any ventilator and dialysis and feeding tube to save them. But like your friend, the story you told earlier, some people, we can't be in their shoes. And they know how they feel. They know how they fought. And when they decide that what they want is comfort and love and no more medicine, no more blood tests, no more x-rays, when they've decided that the family still says, fight, fight, fight. And we have to understand that we should respect with love the choices of the patient. If the fight is gone, but the longing for love and comfort is there, then families should respect them with love and comfort.
Those are very wise words. I wish I had heard them about 15 years ago. My mother-in-law fell and broke her hip. You know, classic story. And she was in her 80s, fell, broke her hip. She was in the hospital. We went up to New York and we went to visit her in the hospital. And I stood there and told her how she had to do everything the doctors were telling her to recover.
Sure.
And I,
sure.
You know, I was encouraging her all out of the, you know, for all the right reasons. But she looked at us and she said, I'm done. And she was. And 2 weeks later, we buried her because she had decided that she had had enough. So I think the message in tonight's entire show has been about taking control of whatever you want and how you want to live the rest of your life, whether that's one day, 1 month, 1 year, or longer. It's all about control. Dr. Hawk, I can't thank you enough. I appreciate your taking the time, being so gracious with the information and the knowledge and sharing it with my audience. I always love speaking with you. My wife is sitting here next to me in the studio, and she keeps saying to me at every break, boy, he's so good, and you really are. So I can't thank you enough. You do amazing things for people, and appreciate
Scott,
that.
You and your show and your company are a gift to Palm Beach County. Good for you.
Thank you so much. This, of course, is Scott Greenberg. Oh, my God, I'm getting older. So is my mom. I've been here tonight with Dr. Leonard Hawk talking about end of life and taking control of your decisions in that arena. If you want to listen to the show, we'll podcast it tomorrow. Just search OMG, I'm getting. Next week, we're going to talk to Joe and Jonathan Karp. I hope everybody has a great week. Happy New Year to those who celebrate. We'll see you next Monday. Dr. Hawk, thank you again. Have a good night, all. Oh, my God, I'm getting older. So is my mom. See you next week. Good night.